There's a hunger in my heart, a hunger in my soul for you. And it grows and it grows and it feeds me like it's never fed me before. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Michelle. How's it going?
It's going good. Happy birthday, by the way.
A month later?
No, not your birthday. When I clicked on Skype, it says it's West Coast Project's birthday.
Oh, it is? I don't even know that.
Well, it's not, because I went back, I mean, not like the website or not the podcast birthday. I went back and looked, and it's not. Your first podcast was actually on my birthday, which is January 6th of 11. That was the first podcast that was put up. So I'm not sure what it was referring to, but on Skype, we have like a little rotating birthday cake on there. So,
I never even knew that a podcast could have a birthday.
I didn't either, but that's what I saw.
Well, Michelle, how have you been since Halt and Catch Fire?
I've been really good. I've been good. Lots of, you know, stuff going on and everything, and busy, but busy's good and good. How about you?
Pretty good. A lot's happened since Halt and Catch Fire. We're actually here to do the preview episode of The Affair. Showtime's show The Affair. It starts on Sunday.
Yeah.
I thought it'd be good to catch up a little bit before. Even though, you know, you can watch the episode on YouTube.
I know. I saw, as I went back and started to watch season 2, I saw that it was available, but I didn't want to watch it until I finished, and I'm just not quite caught up yet. Actually, I'm not even quite halfway through, but I hope to binge watch that a little bit later today.
So you rewatched all of season 2?
I'm working on it. I'm about halfway through it. Not quite, but almost halfway through it.
Like, oh, on episode man, five. You're committed. I just read some past reviews and listen to a couple old episodes from the end of the season.
Well, I was going to do that, especially as time's gotten away from me, but I feel a whole lot more confident when I go back and rewatch it. I'm really surprised how different a show it is binge watching it than it is watching it week to week.
Is it good or is it a chore to binge watch it?
It's both. It's good because you get to go on to the next one. It seems like they always kind of leave you on a cliffhanger a little bit, or something that I feel like's a cliffhanger. But at the same time, for some reason, the episodes that felt like they were so quick watching them week to week really feel drawn out binge watching it. I guess because you're seeing the different views, the different sides, and it just continues forever with the same story. But I've really missed the show. I didn't realize how much I've missed the show. There's not really anything else like it on TV. It kind of, as I was going back looking at the Happy Birthday West Coast Project stuff, I saw The Slap. And it kind of reminded me, you know, back of that. But other than that, I can't really compare the show to anything.
My favorite podcast, The Slap.
I know, yeah. Yeah, that was up there close with what else? Orange is the New Black. And
it's hard to make a series out of The Slap. It's hard to make like a 5-season run out of that. It's probably hard to make a 1-season run out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was pretty good.
It was fun to make fun of. That's why I liked it so much.
Well, I actually went back and watched the other, wasn't the Australian version of it or whatever? And it was pretty good. It's pretty good.
So, Michelle, I'll tell you what I remember from the end of season 2, and then you can fill in the details.
Probably not, because I'm not there yet, but I'll try.
Yeah, but you'll remember.
Maybe.
So they're at the wedding. This is the ending episode of season 2, right? They're at the wedding of Cole and his new squeeze.
Yes. Louisa, yes.
And at the wedding, Scotty comes in and tries to blackmail them, and he's apparently clean and sober for X, like 2 months or something, and tries to blackmail them back into like, hey, I'm clean and sober, ready to take over my share of the restaurant, which apparently now is becoming successful again.
Right.
And they say, Cole says, nope, you're not in yet. We never said you'd be cut in for a full share. How about we review this after like 6 months or a year of you being sober? And this flies him off the edge, and he downs a big thing of scotch and gets drunk and kind of wrecks the wedding and runs out into the... Oh, and he does a killer song. Remember the song?
I don't.
House of the Rising Sun?
Yes.
He nails a song karaoke style at the wedding. But it's all vindictive of like Cole and Allison and how they're screwing him over. And he runs off into the down the road and hides in the boat. And then Allison does it, I don't know, but somehow Allison and Scotty end up on the road. He tries to move in on her and like gets a little rapey with her, and she pushes him away and into the road of the path of the car, of which Helen and Noah are in and driving. Helen's driving, and they run him over.
Right.
So spoiler, this is season two. So if you're right. spoiled by season two, you got to go watch season two.
Yeah.
But
you're behind.
So Helen says, oh my God. And Noah says, well, I'll take over and I'll take responsibility for this. And he says he was driving, and he sees Allison standing in the side of the woods.
Okay. But I can't remember because like I said, I'm not that far. Did Helen No, he saw Allison? I can't remember that.
I don't know about that, right?
That's
probably told in that episode, but I don't remember.
Okay, I don't either.
Also, the interesting thing about the wedding, we see the wedding in their different perspectives. Noah sees Allison in like a bright yellow dress, just like her yellow waitress uniform when he first met her.
Right.
So she's very innocent and kind of submissively like attractive to him. And in her view, she's like less. She's frumpier and not as dollish. So anyway, he saves both. Oh, and then in that episode, the lawyer at the trial kind of says, "Look, if I want to get you off this, I got to put Allison on the spot here because otherwise, it's jury's looking like it's going to convict you." So Noah says, stands up in the trial, says, "No, stop all this nonsense. I did it. I murdered Scotty." Right. You remember it that way?
I do.
All right, so that's my recap. I mean, that's what I needed to remember to like kind of catch myself up, because I didn't even remember any. You know, I didn't even remember what the hell how Scotty died until I started reading this stuff. I mean, life fills your head up with so many details in a year.
It really does, and I didn't either. I mean, you just actually put a whole lot of details back in my mind that I had forgotten about, particularly that House of the Rising Sun song. Man, I can't wait to watch that again now. And you bringing up how they see themselves differently than other people see them, and even how season two, we had different perspectives, not just, I think season one, we went back and forth between who, was it Allison and Noah? And then season two, we added Cole into it. Is that right? And Helen?
Right.
I can't remember. But yeah, we've got all of these different perspectives and how differently people see themselves and see each other in these different perspectives. That's glaring when you're binge watching. It's not so much when you're not, I don't think, but definitely glaring. I know that in season three, have you seen it? Did you watch the
I watched
first
part
episode?
Of it.
I haven't seen any of it, but I've heard that we time jump, right?
Yeah, 3 years.
Yeah. I'm not sure how I feel about that.
Well, one other thing about season two is that at that wedding, Cole and Luis's wedding, Noah and Helen end up on the beach getting drunk together, and they run off into the ocean in their black underwear. So they kind of show that there's some sort of a connection still between Noah and Helen. And it's interesting in season three, I've watched the parts of the episode I watched. Helen is smoking hot. She looks really good. It's 3 years later. He's coming out of prison 3 years later.
Okay, you're spoiling it.
You're going to know that. I mean, you know he went to prison. You know he.
Nah, I don't know. I don't know what they did after the trial.
He got off. He won the lottery.
Okay. I didn't know. Okay.
Well, yeah, he confessed. Anyway, so it is interesting though. You said they're different perspectives, and all these shows that we've been watching or that have been on since the end of season two, like Mr. Robot has kind of a virtual reality perspective type thing that you have to wrestle with.
Sure.
Even like Westworld, if you got into Westworld at all, it's kind of a virtual reality. You know, bends your perspective of what's real and what's not real.
Yeah, I haven't even had a chance to sit to watch that yet, but that's definitely on my list. So,
I mean, even like *Halt and Catch Fire*, *Halt and Catch Fire*, like Ryan. What was Ryan's reality is what you perceive it to be.
Sure.
His reality was so bad that he had to kill himself to get to escape it. And we could have looked at that from the outside and said, "Well, it's really not that bad, dude. It's it's right. Not good, but you gotta pick different options and go a different direction." So all that perception stuff is really interesting because it's really what you perceive. That is the reality.
And I'm going to tell you something else, too. I had forgotten. Yes, absolutely. I agree with that. But I had forgotten how hard this was on the kids and on Helen. I had forgotten. I'd forgotten all of the, the angst. And it was painful. Painful to watch and painful to binge watch the beginning of this and all the stuff Helen was going through with her mother and all the stuff that the kids were going through and Max trying to move in on her. And it was some really gut wrenching kind of stuff to watch. And it was real interesting to see it from the different perspectives because of how much pain there was. Noah always saw his women, I don't know how else to put that. I don't even like that I just said it like that. But as being really confident and beautiful. I mean, maybe not Allison so much confident, but kind of just really pretty, it seemed like. And they didn't see themselves that way. So that's a very interesting psychological viewpoint, I think. And
that's how it always is. Don't you think a lot of people don't see them? Their worst enemy is that person inside themselves that denigrates their, you criticize yourself.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. But it's a great reminder as we go about this series that self-perception isn't necessarily, what other people see. And I just thought that particularly watching and oh my gosh, Max and how Max saw Helen. I mean, I don't think we saw that specifically, not yet as far as I've gone. But I mean, Max was just like obsessed.
Well, self-perception is oftentimes the least accurate way that you really are in the world. It's your virtual reality of yourself is often the most critically underestimated and distorted way that you really are in the world, right? That's Ryan jumping off, spoiler alert, but that's people thinking that things are so bad that they're not accurate.
Is it, or could it be the other way around that the people who are looking at you through these rose colored glasses? Because I don't know how we're going to see, different people looking at different people. What if later on we see, Cole looking at Allison and she doesn't look this beautiful and everything because he's got other things in his life, or maybe he just didn't like her a whole lot anymore. I think a lot of times that colors how we view people too. And I mean, maybe the way we see ourselves a lot of time is the most accurate. And the way other people see us is just colored by their perception of us.
Maybe, but I would go by like the law of averages. Like all the people in the world that know you, there's an average of what you really are versus the way you might be super ultra critical of yourself. I don't know. I think the way you present yourself to the world in that viewpoint is the most accurate.
I think you're probably right, but I just think it's interesting to see how other people would view these characters based on what's going on. And I know even in my own life how much has changed in a year and how I'm viewing these situations and having different emotions. That was one of the reasons that I wanted to watch it too. But I'm really surprised, Mike, by watching it again with different stuff going on in my life and how little tolerance I have for some things now and how much more tolerance I have for other parts of this show now. I'm definitely projecting in this show. And
like what? Just, what little tolerance do you have?
I knew you would ask me.
It would have to be something
it.
About Noah being... It would have to be about Noah, I would guess.
A lot of it's actually about Allison. I'm beginning watching this again. I'm really, like, incredibly frustrated with her. And I don't think I was so much last time. Absolutely Noah. But even Cole, I mean, it's not just one over the other. Cole's inability, his self-destruction when he saw what Allison was doing. I mean, I was really frustrated watching that this time. And I remember feeling more pity watching it the first time. And maybe it was because it was binge watched now in place of, in place of not. But I'm really feeling a lot of frustration at him over the way he's acting and his self-destruction and his, turn against the family kind of. And I mean, of course, the family's out there, but his reaction to everything, his drug use and everything is just, it's driving me crazy.
Well, he's got some demons. You know, Cole had the son that drowned with Allison, and then he's married to Louisa who can't have kids. So he's very family. He's a family dude. He's like totally into family.
Right.
So the fact that he can't have a kid is like haunting him.
Yeah.
That's a big part of this coming up season 3.
Okay.
Because, you know, there's the question about Allison's baby, right? Who's the father?
Oh, I completely believe it's Cole. Completely.
So that's haunting him. He doesn't think he's ever going to have a kid again.
Well, sure. And that was kind of like that was the destroyer of their marriage. But I'm talking about way before that, just like back in the beginning of season 2 when Allison had just left and how he just absolutely went off the rails. And I understand, I do, but I'm just really frustrated with him and I want him to move past it and stuff. I don't know. I'm just binge watching it is completely different to me. And, you know, maybe it's just because, you know, so much time has passed and stuff that, you know, I mean, like you said, a year passes and things come up in our lives. I'm just saying even my perspective might have changed. So it's real interesting to me to see these different perspectives of these characters. And I can't believe how much I've missed it without even realizing that I missed it that much.
Well, to filter out, I mean, since this is a preview of season 3, are you comfortable if you go through like the TV guide review of season of like getting ready for season 3?
Sure.
It's not, and I'll only go by that. I won't. I'll try not to say anything about what I've seen already in episode 1.
Okay.
Well, it's like not too spoilery. It's a little spoilery because it's a review, but I'll keep out what I know. I'll try to anyway.
Okay.
So this is a TV guide. You can read this online, tvguide.com. It's a good framework for this for our podcast to just review.
Okay.
So it starts on Sunday, on Showtime. And it says the new season will pick up 3 years after Noah took the fall for Scotty's murder. He's served his prison sentence and will have to adjust to life on the outside. Meanwhile, Allison, Helen, and Cole have all had to move on after the trial. So they interview Sarah Treem, who's like the creator.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty interesting. She talks about some stuff. So they ask her some questions here. The first season was about how Noah and Allison's affair began, and the second season was the fallout from it. What is season three aiming to show? And Sarah says it's about accountability. I would say that season one was the affair. Season two was the crisis after the affair. Before it gets better, it gets worse. And season three is basically about the characters taking stock of what's happened and then figuring out how they're all accountable. So it's kind of about accountability.
Hmm.
She says, I think it's a redemptive season, but I have a dark aesthetic. It's definitely not going to be sunshine and rainbows, but it will be redemptive.
Well, I couldn't have pictured this sunshine and rainbows, but okay. Okay, that'll be good.
So then they ask her last season, and I should, here, let me tell you who this is. This is Megan Vick of TV Guide asking Sarah Treem these questions.
Okay.
So last season, the mystery of Scotty's death took on a much larger role than it did in the first season. How much of the fallout of Noah's confession are we going to see in season three? And how long will that reverberate throughout the season? Sarah Treem says, the fallout of Noah's confession is a central engine for season three. In different extents for different characters. It's a major part of Noah and Helen's storyline. It's a little bit less intense part of Allison's storyline. And we start off 3 years after the end of season two. So there's your time jump, Michelle.
Okay.
So the season is definitely about what happened immediately after the confession, but also in the long term.
Well, that'll be interesting. I mean, I'm, you know, having not seen any of it at all, I can't even, that is very vague, which I guess is good.
So then they ask her, should people be invested in that mystery and drama as they were, or as they are in the relationships between these characters? What should they expect from this season? And Sarah Treem says, the question viewers need to be asking themselves is, why did Noah confess to a crime he didn't commit? That's what we're asking ourselves in the writer's room going into the third season. What is it about Noah Soloway that he feels like he needs to be punished? That is a question that we aim to answer, and I'm pretty sure we're going to answer it in a way you don't see coming.
Hmm.
And then here's to your... Sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry to say, I mean, especially looking back on it, I mean, Noah, this was the two women in his life, right? I mean, this was Helen and Allison, and he was trying to protect them both. You know, I mean, this was, it doesn't really give us a lot of clues because it wasn't like he just did this to protect Helen. I mean, it was also to protect Allison.
Right. Yeah, if you remember at the end of season two, I think it's Allison who says, you have to do something. You have to choose. And he doesn't choose one of them. He throws himself under the bus.
Right.
So he doesn't really choose.
Right. Well, and I haven't gotten there yet, but also just based on memory, things weren't going so good between Allison and Noah either. At the end of season, or, you know, as season two progressed. Surprise, surprise. But.
So they ask Sarah Treem, will we finally see the results of Joni's DNA test and find out who the father is? And Sarah says, yes, very early.
Oh, okay.
So they ask her, in season one, the different perspectives work to show two sides of the same truth. In season two, they added different pieces to a larger puzzle. So it's funny, Michelle, that they're asking her the very same questions that you brought back up. That difference between season one and two is the two perspectives and now the four perspectives.
Right.
So what is their function in season three? Sarah Treem says, they will work both ways in season three. What we've kind of done is found the indistinct harmony where certain episodes you really see a lot of overlap between the point of views. And there are certain episodes where you're seeing characters just in their own storylines. The way we figured it out in the writer's room happened kind of organically, where we figured out what was needed for the episode. It's not entirely comparative point of views in season three, but they aren't gone either.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was saying about it being. It felt like the episodes were really long to me, some of them. And I think because I was seeing so much overlap, it was like I was watching the same show twice. Of course, with different nuances and stuff, but still, it felt much longer to watch it that way. So it'll be interesting to see how they do that with season three.
So Sarah Trim's pretty tuned in. I will say this about what I know that she maybe doesn't say in this little interview. She's tuned into the current affairs too, Michelle, because there's a at one point in this episode there's a protest on campus at work at a college, and one person says, "Well, these people are protesting," and the other person says, "Well, I remember when I was in college, it all wasn't so safe, and it's not supposed to be a safe haven where everything's perfectly safe and you're in an eggshell. You're in a perfectly safe zone from everything. You need to have a little adversity to learn and grow," which I think is what we've kind of seen as a result of this election, and the everybody gets a trophy type mentality that people have. That she's tuned into that. I think that's interesting.
Okay, tell me exactly what you're talking about. I'm not getting the connection
In
between the two. I'm
season
sorry.
3, episode 1, there's a protest on a college campus, and the
Oh,
kids are
okay.
protesting something that they don't feel safe about something.
Okay,
And
okay.
the one person says to the other, "They're not supposed to feel safe. They're supposed to be here in this laboratory of learning, and it needs to be real, not just totally safe, a padded
I
room."
see. Yeah, okay.
You had a really cool post, Michelle, on your Facebook about the election and about how everybody's safe and everybody gets a trophy, a participation award, and I don't know, it was a really smart take on what's wrong with society. We need reality more than just everybody's like a A student and everybody gets a trophy. I just totally agreed with that.
Oh, well, thanks. I actually wrote it, of course, and then, but I did not write it for Facebook. And my daughter Julia, she read it, and she said, "You really need to post that." And I said, "Yeah, I'm don't know if I'm comfortable with that." And she said, "Well, let's just do it." She goes, "You need to post it." So I was doing something in the kitchen, and she said, "Let me post it. Let me put it on your Facebook." And I said, "If you think it should be posted." I'd actually had like a glass of wine at that point, or I probably wouldn't have even put it up there. And I said, "All right, go ahead and post it if you want to." So
What
she
did you
did.
write it for?
I don't know. I do that a lot of times. I'll write things and they stay in my Google Docs. Honestly, I just felt really compelled to write that, and I couldn't really think about anything other than that for several days. Every time my mind, I had a second for my mind to wander, that's where it would go. And so I sat down one morning and I said, if I'm gonna put this down on paper because I've got to get it out of my head, and I was thinking to myself, if it takes over like 15 minutes, I'm giving it up and I'm Xing it off and I'm done with it. And I literally wrote it in like 4 minutes. And so I was like, okay, that needed to come out. And it was actually up on my laptop in the kitchen. And then Julia came in and that, well, it was like later, like a day later or 2 days maybe, that Julia came. No, it wasn't that long, but it was a little bit anyway that Julia came in and saw it and put it up, several hours at least
So you left
anyway.
your laptop open on the kitchen table, like, "Oh, please, nobody look at this," for like 2 days.
That's not what happened, and it wasn't 2 days. It was just a little while. And no, I didn't leave it open, but when she reopened it, that's what was up. She
I
was
know, I'm
looking
teasing you.
something.
You're the least grandstanding person I know.
Well, thank you. I
All right,
think.
here's where this interview gets a little spoilery, so they ask Sarah Treem, "We know that Noah has a new love interest in this season. What does this mean for his relationship with Allison?" So is that too spoilery, or do you want to know the answer?
Well, they've shown pictures of Noah with, I think it's some blonde, right? No.
No.
No, okay. Well, I've seen something different then. I've definitely seen pictures, and I have not looked for anything, and I've definitely seen pictures of Noah with somebody else. I don't think that's too spoilery.
So she answers, "In terms of Noah and Allison, you're going to find out this season what attracted them to each other, which is something that we have not really r yet revealed."
That's interesting. Yeah.
Up until this point, the perspective on Noah and Allison is that they were kind of in this passionate damage. That's interesting. That they were kind of in this passionate damage with each other. We're going to get deeper in their psyches and show you what actually connected those two characters to each other from the beginning. It doesn't necessarily mean they end up together, but you start to understand the relationship as perhaps deeper than you thought it was. That's interesting.
That is interesting, because I would love to be able to see something from Noah's point of view to make me feel better about Noah. I don't like how much I dislike Noah.
I thought you disliked Allison. Or Cole.
No. I love Cole, but I'm really love Cole. I just was really frustrated with him and his self-destructive behavior at the beginning of season two. That's all I'm saying about Cole. Allison, I don't even begin to imagine what it could possibly be like to have all of the emotions and feelings that a woman would have in her situation. So it's real hard for me, even though I get angry at her. I don't even know who she is, because I don't know if she's who she thinks she is, or if she's who Noah thinks she is, or if she's who Cole thinks she is. I don't know, but I have a hard time laying a lot of blame on Allison just based on what she's been through, even though I don't like a lot of the stuff she does. Noah, I just don't get. I just don't get him. I don't understand his complete lack of regard for the family, if the stuff he's saying is true, like that he's never cheated on Helen before and all that kind of stuff. Then I don't understand him, and I would like to be able to understand him so I cannot dislike him as much as I do. He is, even, and maybe more so in his own perspective, he is awful a lot of the time.
Yeah, I don't think you should worry about how much you like or dislike someone. I just think you should just let it flow and get it, you know, let the story wash over you. I mean, who cares if you dislike him? Maybe you're supposed to dislike him.
Sure, but I'm just saying that I hope, as she's saying that we can see why they connected. I understand, even though I have no idea why, I understand why Allison could have connected with somebody in her situation. And but Noah, I don't get. So I do hope they explain that, whether it makes me madder at him or not. Either way.
No sunshine and rainbows, Michelle.
No, not
all
on
right,
the effect.
How will Noah be different when we see him this season and he's been punished for his crime? Sarah Treem, we've already leaked that he has a beard at the beginning of this season. Okay. You haven't seen the preview, Michelle. Have you at least seen like the photo? He's got a beard. He looks scraggy.
Is he scraggy?
He's scraggy and frumpy. Okay. You know, he was pretty cool. He was pretty successful and cool in season two because he had his big novel and everything.
Right, sure.
He's scraggy and frumpy. He's got like a plaid shirt and like a crappy, ill-fitting jacket. He looks scraggy.
I imagine a few years in prison could do that to
him.
Well,
no, he's out of prison though. He's like got a job and he just. Anyway, so where was I? Well, punished for his crime. We've already leaked that he has a beard at the beginning of the season. I always love Noah. He's my heart. He's a pretty changed man when you meet him at the beginning of this season. A lot of this season is him figuring himself out in a way that he never has before. Noah has some very large problems at the beginning of this season. He's got some immediate threats to himself.
Are they going to make me feel sorry for him after I just sat and said how much I, you know, was angry?
Because I don't know.
That'll be interesting.
You'll know. You'll feel something about him.
Yeah, okay.
Montauk has played a big part in the show. How much will the island be featured in season three? Sarah says, Cole's relationship to Montauk is a really big part of season three and how that itself actually changes. It's interesting because Montauk is changing. Allison's relationship to Montauk also changes in season three. Montauk is always the beating heart of the show. I have actually never felt that way. That Montauk was a big character in this show.
Well, I think in season one, I mean, of course, I'm not seeing it as much in season two, although they do talk about it a lot. When Allison, she talks about being like a small town girl and stuff when she meets with Yvonne and I can't remember her husband's name right now, at the owners of the cabin that she and Noah stayed in season two at the beginning.
But yeah, I guess they talk about, like, Montauk, the rum runners and stuff, the history.
Well, also, Helen's father, when he gets in the cab with Cole, he is talking about how long they've been on the island. And I don't know, they always go back to it's God's country and it's beautiful and, you know, stuff like that. So, or maybe they were talking about the place that the cabin was, but there was a whole lot about this small town versus the city. And I was actually thinking about that as I was watching, I think season three, maybe, thinking about when they go to the city, when Allison and Noah go to the city and how much everything changes.
Episode three, you mean?
Sorry. Yeah. Episode three. Season two.
Yeah, I guess it's the history of Montauk is kind of interesting and the sites around it, but I don't think it affected the affair. Like, the affair could have been in New Orleans or in Key West or Hilton Head. It doesn't really matter. But I guess it's probably interesting to Sarah Treem. That's probably why she put it in Montauk.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I would call it the beating heart of the show.
No, I don't think so far. I mean, but you also have to think about that's where Allison and Cole's child died, too. So it kind of takes everything back there. I'd also forgotten, in at least one of the perspectives, Allison's talking about how she walked into the ocean to because she didn't want to live anymore.
Yeah, but there's lots of ocean everywhere.
Well, sure.
I guess if Sarah Treem says it, it must be the beating heart of her story, though.
Okay.
When you first pitched this show, did you have all three seasons planned out? How much more of the affair is there to tell? Sarah says, I had three seasons planned when I pitched it to Showtime. What I don't know is if there will be more than three seasons. The original pitch was just three, so we'll see.
Hmm.
Do you have an alternate ending planned if you get to a fourth season? Yes.
Really? Okay.
And that's it. That's the end of it.
Okay, That's interesting.
My guess would be that it does get, there'll be somebody wanting to renew this for longer. Because a lot of people I talk to like this show.
Do you think that's good?
That they would renew it?
Are you happy about that? Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, everything's got a fine balance between when it should end and when it's too much.
Right. But if Sarah's story ended at the end of season three, I hope they don't do something. Because this, I don't know. I guess with the time jumps and stuff, it's okay. You can extend it maybe a little bit and stuff. We see some TV that just destroys itself, extending beyond the storyline. So I just hope that they don't end up doing that. Because the story is tragic, and it's romantic, and it just creates so much feeling and emotion in you, and I just don't want to see it fizzle, I guess.
Do you like the fact that Noah's going to have a new love interest? A new and different woman?
I'm really ambivalent on that. Because... Okay, part of me is so, it's like Noah and Allison shouldn't be together because of how they got together. So it seems almost justified that they're not together anymore. But then part of me thinks, so you destroyed everybody's family and then you're not even still together? And you, like, destroyed all these lives. So I know that's not directly related to your question about him being with somebody else. I don't think that the somebody else doesn't matter to me right now. what matters to me is the fact that he and Allison are not together. And I'm really torn up about how I feel about it. How do you feel?
Well, I'll reserve on how I feel and just say my point was that they could go on season 5, season 6, season 7. If Noah has a new babe every season, they could make it last forever. So they just keep moving ahead through this guy who has an affair every year. I guess it's not an affair if you end an affair and start a new one. The new one isn't really an affair. It's an affair if you're married and you're cheating on your wife.
Well, let me ask you, though. So I don't even know if you know this, and you may not even want to answer if you do, but so he and Allison, does she leave him when he's in jail? I mean, do we know that? Is it just like he went away for 3 years and she's like, sorry, couldn't wait, or whatever?
I watched the first 20 minutes or so of this season, this episode one, and I don't think I've seen Allison yet.
Okay.
So I don't know the answer to that. There is Helen, and you do kind of see this new woman. And like I said, Helen, I still wonder why he left Helen, because she's smoking hot, and she's smart, she cares about him. She's trying to get him, you know, to keep up with the kids, and the kids hate him. So it's interesting.
Well, yeah, and I mean, and that's so magnified in the beginning of season 2, how destroyed, Cole is destroyed and handles it really poor. I mean, you know, he's really self-destructively handles it. Helen had a few self-destructive moments in there, but Helen just adored Noah. I mean, she just loved him, and to see that is awful, and to see the effect that it had on the children and stuff, watching that like hour after hour, it's a real gut-wrenching kind of painful thing that I did not experience watching it week to week.
Yeah, you can tell in this first episode she still loves him, she still cares about him. There's an interesting scene in the first part of this episode where she comes to visit him in jail. And she's okay. Like, why are you in here? I should be in here. You know, so she's really like in debt to him almost for like swapping places with her.
Right.
So that's interesting.
Well, yeah, and I understand that. But as I remember season 3 ending, he forced her to drive that night. She didn't want to drive either. And I'm not saying still that it was okay or anything. Don't misunderstand. But he forced her, right, to drive. So I mean, yeah, I guess
one thing they didn't incorporate in the current events of things is the fact that Ubers are around and stuff now.
That's interesting.
They didn't have to drive. They really didn't have to. Probably cabs too. I mean, they didn't really have to drive anywhere.
No. Well, no. I mean, you know, Cole's whole livelihood in season 2 is a cab. They had a taxi service, so absolutely not.
Also, Allison never really pushed. I don't think my perception of this was that she pushed Scotty on purpose in front of a car. Wasn't she just fighting him off because he was like grabbing her?
Yeah, I mean, it was not very believable the way that the story was told, because you're on a pitch black road and you don't see a car, a pitch black straight, you know, road, and you don't see car lights, you know, you don't see a car coming from far away. But that's not how they showed it to us. They showed it to us that he was grabbing her. She pushed him, and after she pushed him, she saw the car as he went, like, or, you know, like it all happened kind of simultaneously. So I don't think, if they told us the story as the story happened, I don't think she did it deliberately to push him in front of
and
a
they
car.
Were all drunk and drinking and right. there is no clean perfect escape. Like, it's, oh, it was just an accident, because even if it's just an accident and you're drunk and driving, you're in big trouble.
Right, but I mean, are you in that much trouble? Is it all the same?
Sure.
Are you okay? Well, I don't know.
The whole beginning of Oz is a guy, a lawyer, like a really respectable citizen, drunk driving, and he hits a kid, I think, on a bike, and he goes to jail, and then he's like incorporated. He's like, that's the start of how Oz, the show Oz, started.
Oh, okay.
Just an accident.
Yeah.
Not a murder, you know. It wasn't really ever a murder.
But even if somebody's like in the middle of the road, does that not, you know, matter at all?
You run them down on purpose, maybe. But I don't think it was portrayed that Scotty was. That's what I'm saying. I don't think Allison said, oh, here comes a car. Here's my chance. Bam, I got rid of Scotty. She's just fighting him off, and he was drunk, and, you know, Helen was drunk, and it's kind of a weird confluence of bad events.
Yeah, especially considering, you know, that, I mean, very coincidental that it was Noah and Helen and Allison.
They did a really good job, though, of tying up all these events that have, you know, it was like Cole and Allison are married, their kid dies, and then Cole meets a woman that can't have a baby, so that's a dilemma. And then Allison meets Noah, who has like a nice, perfect family, and then they have a baby, it appears. I guess we'll find out. So there's a baby now that, and then Noah has to go to jail because, I mean, it's all crazy weird how they put all those events into one. They connected them all at the end.
And it's a good story, and they did a really good job, I thought, at the end of season two. I mean, at the end of season one, I remember you and I were frustrated because we didn't know anything. And so we'd watch this whole series, you know, the whole season, and we didn't know anything. And I remember you saying something like, you were going to be really frustrated if you watched season two, and it kind of left you in the same lurch as season one. But I thought they tied it up really nicely in season two.
Well, and also the premise of like, how can a affair show go on for more than one season?
Right.
It's an affair. You have the affair. Okay, now it looks like Allison and Noah are like not in their affair anymore, and his marriage is over. So what is there left to tell? But it looks like there's a lot of interesting stuff left to tell.
Yeah. Yeah, and now the fallout of all that. So it'll be interesting.
All right, Michelle, so that's it for our preview. The podcast will come out by Tuesday morning after the Sunday episodes.
Okay.
You been watching anything else since last time I talked to you?
Not so much, no.
No Walking Dead?
Yeah, I've been watching it. You know, I had to turn it off. I turned off season or episode one this season. I got about to the part, can we spoil it? The part where Rick was going to potentially cut off Carl's arm. And I'm like, I'm not doing this to myself.
Probably shouldn't spoil that. But the interesting thing about episode two is that Halt and Catch Fire is on episode two. Yo-Yo is one of King Ezekiel's crew.
And there's something so comical about this King Ezekiel and the whole story behind it, don't you think?
I thought you said you stopped watching it.
No, I stopped just on the one episode. I went back. I actually went back and watched it like a week and a half later after I'd watched episode two. But
yeah, it is funny. This episode two was rather funny. I think they needed it to be after episode one.
I guess. And I was watching, I guess it was episode three. Was this last one episode three?
And I don't know.
Well, I was listening to Bald Move podcast about it, and I could not agree more with them. You can't take Negan in hour long. I think this one was like an hour and a half, and you can't take Negan in that long of a dose. By the end of it, Negan felt comical to me, and I don't think that's the way they wanted Negan to feel. It was just way over the top. You can only do so much, you know, smearing stuff in your face and threats and just that. I mean, it just felt silly.
I think that is the way that they want to portray him, but I also do agree it is kind of silly.
You think they want to portray him as silly?
I think they want to portray him as like over the top, sarcastic.
Right. Right. I mean, playful in his sadistic ways and stuff. And after a while of that, you can only do that in small doses and make it effective to me. And I felt like it was so over the top that by the end of it, when Negan was doing his sarcasm and his, meanness, I was smiling. And that's just like the... I was just shocked at my own reaction to it, but I completely agree.
You were smiling?
Yes, I thought he was silly. I just thought the stuff he was saying just felt silly to me in place of like a threat. It was just like, oh, give me a break. I mean, probably not like, you know, grinning maniacally at the TV or something, but just like kind of inwardly smiling, like, this is ridiculous. Give me a break. And I thought it was way over the top. I thought they went over the top in the first 20 minutes, and they made the episode an hour and a half, and I was just like, no.
You wouldn't smile if somebody took your mattress away and burned it, Michelle.
How many mattresses? I mean, okay, mattresses, I guess they get dusty or something, but every house has a mattress, right? I mean, go get another mattress in place of laying a comforter down on the floor. Right? I mean, it's not like you run out of mattresses. 95% of the population's gone, and almost every one of us has a mattress. I mean, just go get another one.
Maybe for that night, that's what they did. I don't know. It's pretty mean, though, just for the hell of it. I'm just going to make you uncomfortable. Not to my advantage, just to your discomfort.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, all of it's just... I don't know. It's just stuff like that. It's just like silly. I mean, go to a mattress store and get, I can't imagine the mattress stores were looted and go.
Well, that's
get,
the whole point of Negan though. It's like, I'll make it so bad on you that when I'm not making it bad on you, you'll like me for not making it bad.
Yeah.
He's just psychologically screwing with them.
Yeah. It was just comical by the end to me. It was so over the top.
But he's always been comical, knocking on the gate like, let me in, little piggies.
Yeah, but that can be scary. I mean, haven't you ever seen like the scary shows where people do that kind of stuff? And it kind of was at the beginning. It was like, oh, I mean, your heart just kind of drops and you think, no, not him, not this. Even though he's doing it in a, I don't know, it's kind of like clowns, you know, they're supposed to be funny, but they're really kind of scary, and a scary clown's the worst of the worst. And he's kind of like that, but then it just goes on and on and on.
Yeah, it went on too long, but it was pretty smart. I mean, it was scary that he came unexpectedly. Like, he didn't come when he said he was going to come a month later.
Right.
He came, like, early.
Right.
All happy and scary and creepy.
But why wouldn't they just leave?
Well, because they're in a
pack
safe
up and go somewhere else.
Because they're in a safe compound.
But they're not. I mean, they're not even afraid of the walkers anymore, right? I mean,
yeah, but there's other. Like, I mean, I guess the enemy. You know that there's other people like Negan in the world. They've met the governor already and dealt with him. It's just like it's a bad world out there, and they're in a walled compound. They made the psychological deal. All right, half. We'll get them half and give them half. And even though half looks like it's everything, but
yeah, particularly with the guns. So now they're left there defenseless.
That was stupid. Hide a couple guns somewhere.
Yeah.
Even just leave them lying on the ground out in the woods. So if Negan sees it, oh, here's a gun. Like, he finds it. It's not hidden. It's not like they're. I don't know.
Well, right, and here is Rick going, if he ever catches you with a gun, he's going to come and do all... Well, I mean, so you're never going to find a gun anywhere and pick it up because of that? I mean, it's just silly. That's not even smart. Of course, if you found a gun somewhere, you'd get it.
Well, they're building it up. Because, I mean, there is a point where you decide, look, fuck this. I'm going to die fighting, or I'm going to, you know, be free.
Sure.
You don't put. Sure. I'm not going to put up with shit that gets shittier every day. And I guess they're building to that. There will be a point where they say, all right, enough's enough.
I guess, but I mean, they're building to it after he just pulverized Glenn and Abraham. I mean, threatened his own son, Carl. I mean, how much more can you build? And probably the most disturbing part of that was how they were with Enid. Right.
Well, I thought the most disturbing part was he was looking for, what's her name? Maggie. He's looking for Maggie, like, oh, right. I'm going to take Maggie back with me and she's going to be my sex slave or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, enough of The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
So, all right, Michelle, so I'll see you on Tuesday for our review of The Affair. Are you looking forward to season three?
I really am. I really am, even more so now that you've given me all these little tidbits. So I'm really looking forward to catching it all up and finishing up my catch up and starting fresh.
All right, I'll let you get back to your review of episode two or season two.
Yeah. Okay.
How do people reach you for emails and stuff?
I am at Michelle from TN.
Ooh, a little drama there.
I know. Well, I was thinking email.
Forgot where you were. I'm at Michelle from FL. You moved to Florida, Michelle?
Oh my gosh! I swear I just blanked completely out. I was thinking of my email address.
You gave us the Negan version. I'm at Michelle from TN.
My email address also has my name in it. So when you said email, it just I was like, oh my gosh, what?
Yeah, I screwed it. It's never really email, Twitter. And I'm at Scathing Tweets.
Yeah.
All right, Michelle. Stop. See you Tuesday.
All right, Mike. See you then. Bye bye. Don't say that.
Other people's lives are at stake here besides your own.
I want nothing from him.
At a certain point, fate takes over a story. And even the author himself loses control.
I didn't kill Scott Lockhart.
Well, we gotta find out who did.